Where do I start? How do I train recall? How long should we work on healing before moving on? Is crate training really that important? We hear these questions all the time, and there's one answer that will help with all of them. The complete step-by-step dog training course found at Standing Stone Supply. They break down the what, when, where, and how to train your own dog from 8 weeks to 1 year old. They've got it all laid out for you, down to even the daily activity checklist to keep you and your puppy on track. Check out standingstonesupply.com and remember to use code GDIY to save 10%. Being an upland hunter in the South nowadays unfortunately means a lot of travel to try and find birds for my dogs. This means it's even more important that my map scouting is reliable to justify the effort. This is where Onyx comes in. I can honestly say that Onyx directly impacts the level of success I find on my trips. Whether it's the private versus public land boundaries, the expanding number of unique layers and features by state, or the 3D mapping capabilities, my initial step in planning my hunting trip starts with Onyx. To know where you're going, you have to first know where you stand. Check out Onyx Hunt Maps and use code GDIY20 at checkout to save 20%. GDIY profiles are bonus episodes that tell the stories of how your everyday handler got into the gun dog world. You'll hear plenty of examples of what to do as well as what not to do and how they learn from those experiences. These episodes are being put out to tell the honest stories that we as do-it-yourself dog handlers can all relate to. If you think you would be a good fit for a profile episode, please go to gundogityourself.com and complete the contact form, and we may get back to you so that you can share your story.
We get asked all the time what the most important thing to consider is when training and living with a hunting dog, and they're often surprised when they hear us answer with proper nutrition. It's pretty obvious when you think about it, though. It doesn't matter how well the dog is trained if it doesn't have the right fuel. The saying garbage in, garbage out rings true in dog nutrition. Eukanuba's premium performance lineup goes beyond just protein and fat with a number of different formulas designed to fuel your dog's specific activity level while supporting their recovery and optimizing their nutrient delivery. The proof is in the pudding, or lack thereof, when you make the switch to Eukanuba. You'll see immediate results in your dog's energy level and drive. They have a formula for every type of dog, from your hardest working dog in the field to your laziest retired dog on the couch. Head on over to EukanubaSportingDog.com to find the right formula for your hunting partner. Make the switch today and let Eukanuba fuel your dog so you can focus on what you and your dog actually love to do, work.
Welcome back to another edition of the GDIY Profile. This month we have Chris Domenici on the line. Chris, how you doing, man?
Like I said, if I had a tail, I'd wag it.
I love it. That's a little bit better than me always living the dream, right?
They're both good.
Well, you know, let's go ahead and get started with what we always do. Tell everybody where you're from and what got you into this crazy world of gun dogs.
So I live in the eastern part of Pennsylvania, which is known as the Lehigh Valley. Been here all my life. Pretty sure they're going to put me in the ground here. Been a lifelong Pennsylvanian. Enjoy all the fantastic outdoor opportunities that come along with Pennsylvania. Hunting, fishing, hiking. Like I live 20 minutes from the Appalachian Trail. Just a beautiful area. What got me into gun dogs was, like a lot of people, I'm sure, was somewhat of an accident. I was actually living on a farm down in Bucks County at the time, renting a room in a farmhouse. And one of the other tenants on the farm came home with two puppies, but she only wanted one. The other one was sort of extra baggage, and the people that were selling the puppy said, well, if you take both of them, we'll give you both for $25 each. And guess who ended up with the other dog.
Well, I've always heard that, you know, nothing good can come from a free dog. I can't say I've heard anything coming bad from a $25 dog, though.
I often say it was the best $25 I ever spent on anything dog related. So,
yeah.
He was a bit of a mutt. He was a lab Chesapeake mix. But that's really what got me started into it. I had not owned a dog ever in my life before. I was 24 or 25 at the time. Didn't know my elbow from third base when it came to training dogs. Yep. Or anything about them. If anybody listening has had a Chesapeake or some form of a Chesapeake, they know that they are quite thick-skinned and stubborn. But actually, that turned out to be a benefit to me, because I did everything wrong that you can imagine.
And, as we all did.
Yeah, and because he was so thick about it, or has such a strong will, it didn't bother him. If I would have done that to any of my subsequent dogs, it would have broke them. And yep. that's the kind of thing that we, as owners and trainers, we need to pay really good attention to and not make those mistakes in subsequent dogs.
Yep.
You know, we think we're always training the dog or teaching the dog. Don't be so close-minded that the dog can't teach you something.
There you go. I love that. It's a good rule, because I think you're right. Is every dog is not so much a lesson that you can apply to that dog. Sometimes it is, but it's really a lesson to apply to the next dog and two, three dogs down the road. And to your point, you know, we kind of get lucky in a lot of ways, and what we get away with on the first dogs, usually, right? You know, not everybody's right. That lucky, but usually we are. So kind of walk me through how your hunting and love for dogs grew from that lab and Chessie mix.
So that turned me into a duck hunter. Some might even say, those that know me, an avid or perhaps rabid duck hunter. You know,
it happens. From
one, you go from one shotgun to multiple shotguns to bags of decoys and boats.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just how that developed. But he was also a very versatile dog. He would hunt grouse when duck season was over. We would head north, and my uncle has property up in Bradford County, and we would be chasing grouse up there when they were very plentiful. I'm talking 20 flushes a day. You know, they were really prolific. And after about two or three flushes, I could see a light bulb go on, and he'd go, "Oh yeah, I remember this. We're not swimming after ducks anymore. We're chasing grouse." And, you know, he would just come around like that. And he was a great grouse dog. He flushed the same grouse. Anybody who's hunted grouse know that you can flush them multiple times.
Yeah.
If you pay attention where they fly, he flushed the same grouse five times till I finally was able to kill it. You know,
persistence.
That's the kind of dog he was. He was very persistent like that.
Now I have to ask, did you actually shoot on the previous four times, or did it take five times for you to get over not being able to put a bead on it and just point and shoot?
So you've grouse hunted two before, it sounds like.
Oh yeah.
The first three flushes, I didn't even get a chance to click the safety off. The fourth one, I got a shot, and then the fifth one, I finally was able to hit it.
There you go. So it's not like he had to forgive you on the first four misses, no, right? He only had to forgive one miss. So, okay, the persistence makes a little more sense now.
So then I had another lab, a chocolate lab, that was actually offspring of my sister-in-law's dog. She bred her yellow lab, and she got a choice of either a stud fee or pick of the litter, and she transferred the pick to me. Was a chocolate lab. He was a very... I guess the term would be biddable dog, and just friendliest dog. Anybody could watch him. Anybody could babysit him. You know, he was just fantastic. Didn't have the same hunt drive the previous dog had. Wasn't real keen on going into cold water.
Okay.
So, you know, just that's how some dog, he liked to hunt grouse. He liked to hunt dove. If the water wasn't too cold, he was okay with it, that kind of thing.
So you had one wet dog and then a dry dog.
Yeah. And then after him, this is where I made the transition into pointing dogs, Weimaraners. I have a Weimaraner now. After he unexpectedly passed away, and this is something else I don't do. So a little background on me, I'm a recovering engineer. I typically don't make emotional decisions. I don't make decisions without a spreadsheet, right?
Yep. Very analytical.
And after about two or three weeks, we couldn't stand it anymore. And I ended up, there's a not far from my house, a guy had bred some Weimaraners. I end up with this Weimaraner somewhat by accident. That's a whole nother story in and of itself, how I was able to track this guy down after talking to him like 2 weeks previous. And that was my intro into pointing dogs. Although the Chesapeake, I took him on a chucker hunt one time at a game farm, and all of a sudden he locked up one time, and my buddies and I are looking at each other. I'm like, I don't know, guys. I've never really seen him do this before, but I'm going to trust him. And sure enough, there was a chucker, you know, three, 4 feet off the end of his nose.
So we've heard of pointing labs, but I think you're the first person that's talked about a pointing Chessie, right?
Yeah, he was something else.
So you looked into your lab and Chessie mix to kind of get the ball rolling on ducks, and then you just said that you kind of more or less lucked into your by accident your wime. You know, how do you get so lucky to keep just falling into a dog that kind of opens your whole world up into a whole new passion?
I don't know. Being at the right place at the right time. I guess I look back on it as a true blessing to be matched up with some really terrific dogs. I also tell people, you know, there's a whole lot in that dog, any dog, you know, whether it's a hunting dog or just a house dog, there's a lot going on in that brain.
Oh yeah.
Every dog has potential. It's up to us again, as the trainers and the teachers, to capitalize on that potential.
Yes.
It's all there. Every one of them has it, you know? And the first Weimaraner I had, like I said, I never had a pointer before. I don't think I started pheasant hunting with him until, I'm going to say he was close to 4 years old, because he was, like I said, more of an emotional purchase. And I really didn't see myself as a pheasant hunter, which is hard to
caught up in your passion for duck hunting.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit, you know, leaving that behind because of the pain of losing a dog unexpectedly. You know, losing a dog affects everybody differently. And I guess it changed me a little bit. But so we end up with Boomer. That was the first Weimaraner. And like I said, I don't think I hunted. I'd have to check to figure it out, but I'm going to say it was close to 4 years till I really started pheasant hunting with him seriously.
Okay.
But again, he had a lot of natural ability that just needed a little tweaking and guidance here. I don't know about other retrieving or pointing breeds or other folks that own Weimaraners, but both of my Weimaraners have an unbelievably strong desire to retrieve.
Okay.
It's just, I don't know if it's part of the breed, but they've both been like this. I would say either one of them had more retrieving desire than my labs put together.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Well, so you're on your second Weimaraner now. Am I understanding that correct?
That is correct. I have a 2.5-year-old Weimaraner named Hans.
Okay. So did you just happen upon Hans like the other dogs, or did you kind of realize your passion for pheasant hunting and upland hunting and do your typical research and everything, kind of like what's typically advised to somebody getting their next dog?
So I realized that I wanted to continue to be more of a pheasant hunter than a duck hunter. I mean, I pursue other things too. I turkey hunt in the spring, I deer hunt, you know, but those are all sort of sidelines compared to pheasant hunting. So I decided that I was going to continue down that route. So second Weimaraner didn't exactly fall into this guy. But a little bit. I had been doing some research on Weimaraner breeders, trying to find another one, because not everybody just happens to have a litter ready to go. So my wife and I were both doing some research. I don't think I really knew that she was doing research. I had spoken to a breeder up in northern Pennsylvania. He had initiated a breeding between his a male and a female that he had. And it turned out it didn't take. And sort of at the last minute, my wife had connected with a breeder down in southern Pennsylvania, almost down into Maryland, very close to the Maryland line. Name of the kennel is Mavericks Knight Weimaraners. And unbeknownst to me, my wife and her had been communicating, and turned out that she had one male Weimaraner left.
Mm.
So
it was meant to be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we went down to visit one time, and there's a whole, as you can imagine, I forget how many was in his litter, 10 or 12. There was a bunch of them. And, you know, we look over, and I forget, I think he had a black collar on, and she said something about, yeah, the black one would be yours, you know. And I look down, and in all these feet and ears, there's that one with the black collar looking up at me. So that's how we ended up with them.
What caught your imagination? What made you want to switch from ducks to the parrots? You know, what got you chasing them primarily?
I think it has to do with just the dog work that is an ongoing process throughout the hunt. Don't get me wrong. I love duck hunting. There's some days like today was spitting a little bit of snow up here in Pennsylvania, gray clouds. And I'm thinking, boy, that would be a good day to be on the lake.
Yeah.
You know, but there's not as much interaction and teamwork between a retriever, because there's a lot of idle time, you know, when you're sitting in the duck blind waiting. Like I said, it's got a certain drive to it. But when you're out in the field and you're busting through cover together, and you know you're watching your dog, and all of a sudden his behavior changes right there. I mean, that's really, and then they lock up on something.
Yep.
At that point in time, if I don't take the safety off, I'm ahead of the game for that day. That's how I look at it. You know, if you're able to get one to come up and it's a rooster and put it in the bag, icing on the cake. But, you know, it's all that dog work and that interaction between the two of you and him starting to be able to read you and your body language and, you know,
yep. You know,
tell him to go through this fence line and send him down the other side of the fence line and that sort of thing.
So tell me, like, what kind of learning curve were you looking at? I mean, I know that you did the duck hunting with the Chessie and Labs there for a little bit and then switched to Wimes. But overall, just your dog training, you know, what was it like tackling it when the $25 pup landed in your lap and then all of a sudden you're getting a Wime, you know, years later and changing from your flushing dog to your pointing dog? Talk to me about the learning curve and how you kind of went about tackling that and getting comfortable in training the dog yourself.
For which one of us, the dog or me?
Either one. Your pick. Dealer's choice.
Yeah. So training, I think there's a lot of similarities, and I probably have maybe spent more time than I should have in training my Weimaraners some of the same things that I train my retrievers. For example, although I don't think this is a bad thing, hand signals. Mm-hmm. I think hand signals are hugely important and very easy to train a dog. You know, if you've ever seen the game of baseball played with a dog, if you know what that is.
Oh, yeah, the diamond.
Yeah, I mean, and as a point here, when I first got that dog, so I'm going to age myself here a little bit. That was 1985, 86. Okay, Al mm-hmm. Gore hadn't even invented the internet.
So how do you train a dog without YouTube?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there was a lot of bookstore work, literally. You go to the bookstore and you look to see what kind of dog training books they have. And there was a series of books written by a guy by the name of Richard Walter,
mm-hmm.
Walter.
Yep.
Classic.
Gun dog and water dog.
Gun dog, game dog, water dog, exactly.
Yep.
And they were just great base skills to teach your dog that you could build on later. And one of them was hand signals, for example, whistle training, you know, all those things. So there was a lot of things in the retriever world that transferred over to the pointer world as far as managing your dog. If you have a dog that you can't manage, it's going to ruin your hunt or at least interrupt it, let's say.
I agree.
Okay. So if you have a dog that is ranging out, and sometimes my dog ranges further than he should, and I have to remind him, I can't hit anything that far, Hans. You know, come on back a little bit. You know, so my retrievers were whistle trained with a lifeguard whistle. And they were great. That chocolate lab, his name was Gunner. I could sit him in a cornfield and I could walk 400 or 500 yards away and he would sit there. And then I could bring him in partway with the whistle and stop him partway, bring him in some more, stop him partway. He would sit at 300 yards, 200 yards, whatever. I think it's important to without racking your brain or the dog's brain to strive to achieve something like that, some kind of discipline that you can then build on later. Because if you got a dog that's, you know, taken off or chasing something he's not supposed to, and you can stop him with a single whistle blast, that's valuable.
It can actually save your hunt. You know, not, it's even more so, it's more than just the enjoyment of the hunt, right? Well, you know, and a good obedient dog is a lot more enjoyable to hunt with than a crazy dog is, just bouncing all over the place. But, you know, if you have that dog that breaks in a certain situation, you being able to stop with a single whistle or command can actually save your hunt and save an experience with birds and a contact, to where if you just let it go, it could keep on going and busting birds or flare the next group or whatever.
The dog could end up running across the road if you're in an
that
area.
That too. Yep. Yeah. Safety concerns, so, for yeah. sure.
So the transition or the training for me, I think I used a lot of the same, let's say, disciplines of control.
Well, dog training is dog training, right? You know, the task may dog training is dog training. The task may change, but yes. at the end of the day, the principles are still the same principles.
Correct. And I think with pointers, you know, you're relying a lot of on the natural ability.
Yes.
You know, they got that sensor on the end of their nose, man. And as soon as they get onto it, typically they're going to lock up. I mean, I remember my first Weimaraner, Boomer, first time he saw a bird on a piece of barbed wire, he looks up at it and all of a sudden he locks up. I didn't teach him to do that.
On a piece of barbed wire? Was the bird just perched on it?
Yeah, okay. Like a sparrow or something like that.
All right. I didn't know if somebody like shot it and hung it on a barbed wire or something. I wanted some clarification on that. Yeah, I'm like, what kind of training method was this?
Right. So, I mean, a lot of it, but again, they've got that natural base that's intuitive to them. You've got to expand on that and work on that. And, you know, it comes in with teaching them whoa, because, you know, when you teach a dog whoa, that's also confidence to him. Okay, dad is saying whoa. That means we're getting into birds. That means I got to back off and some good stuff is going to happen here in the next couple seconds, hopefully.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
They start to correlate that. They start to correlate, you know, hey, every time he says whoa, the next thing is this flurry of wings.
Yep. So let me ask you, so it's you know, we talk about it all the time, pointing dogs' natural abilities, you know, encourage the good, discourage the bad, but overall, let the dog's genetics and natural ability take over, get the heck out of the way, right? So when you went to training your dog, did you rely mostly on just bird contacts when it came to the actual hunting ability and training?
Yeah. I save bird wings for training so that when we are doing retriever type things, he has that scent to key on. You can't beat live birds.
Yep.
So if you can either get out during the hunting season, the more you can get out and get on the birds, it instills and develops a dog so much quicker and better the more you can put them on birds. I mean, that's just a given.
Yeah.
Going to game farms, there's no challenge there, but it's great training for the dog.
Yeah.
So.
No, absolutely. Now, Pennsylvania, do you guys still have any actual wild bird population? I know you guys do the pheasant release program, but y'all have an actual like established wild population still?
We do not.
Okay.
If you go back to what the years I was mentioning in the 80s and 90s, I would say up until about mid 90s, we still had within a walking distance of where I live, and I'm 10 minutes north of the Allentown Airport. There were still wild pheasants around. But from like the mid 90s on, the farming practices, pesticides, insecticides,
yeah,
hawks, fox, coyote, you know, all those things have contributed to, I've not seen a wild pheasant here in Pennsylvania, in 15, 20 years.
So, just out of curiosity, are you aware of any programs or attempts to bring wild populations back, or is it just kind of everybody's kind of accepted it for what it is and just going with the released bird program?
No, they actually do have a pheasant restoration project that they're trying to do, and I don't know the exact location. It's out in the middle of the state somewhere where they have an area sectioned off. You're not allowed to pheasant hunt on it, and they're trying to bring them back under those circumstances. It's unique to Pennsylvania. We've got about 3 million acres of property that is public that you can hunt on. And that's a bunch. You know, yeah. I was in Iowa a couple weeks ago, beginning of November, actually like a month ago. And they're a bigger state than us, but I know they don't have as many acres of public hunting land, but they got a lot more
bird
habitat for pheasants.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a lot of timber. So that property I mentioned about my uncle's up in Bradford County, there's a state game land that borders his property that's 19,000 acres. You know, that's just to give you an idea of some of the property there. So pheasants are not real conducive to Pennsylvania anymore.
Gotcha.
Turkeys actually have come back significantly with, you know, at the same time of the demise of the pheasant here. Turkeys have come back.
That tends to be a commonality in a lot of areas, to where I know down here it's like you go to a Quail Forever banquet or something, there's always somebody talking about how turkeys are the reason for the downfall of the quail in the Southeast, right? That may be a small contributing factor. It's not the main one, but it does pop up its head here and there.
And ironically, too, Pennsylvania's never had like large sections of prairie grass like Iowa does, for example, but we did have pheasants, but we had different habitat. We had, you know, thick fence rows. And when I say a fence row, I don't mean like a section of barbed wire on posts. I'm talking about like a tree line that might have been, I don't know, maybe 10 yards wide with the tops of trees that have fallen off over years, and the farmers would throw rocks in the tree line and everything. And you could walk down a tree line after corn was cut and flush a bunch of pheasants. But even that's now somewhat gone because they either eliminate tree lines or they farm right up against them.
Yeah.
And again, insecticides, pesticides, all those things. So.
Yep, absolutely. So, Chris, you know, you kind of have a unique perspective in, you just kind of fell into your labs and chessies, and you went from an avid duck hunter to an avid uplander with your wimes. You know, kind of break it down, give your number one piece of advice for somebody that may just be starting out, because again, with your unique perspective, you had to make a concerted effort to go to a bookstore or a library to figure out how to train your dog, to where nowadays we can just plug it in on our phones and you know, you come away with more information than what you could gather in a library in a lifetime, right? So give us your perspective of what's Chris's number one tip for somebody looking to get their first dog or just got their first dog and want to get started.
Upland hunting, right? I guess I would say try to understand if you're going to want to have, well, the first fork in the road is pointer or flusher.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got to decide there. And that, I think, is more dictated by your style of hunting. Are you a track star, or do you like to really pick your way through cover? Okay.
Yeah.
For example, Hans doesn't range very far for me, 40 yards top. And that's when I remind him, hey, I can't hit anything past 40 yards, you know. And that's where the training and the discipline comes in, where I just beep the collar, no stimuli, just a beep, which replaces my whistle. I don't have to yell and be rude out in the field or anything like that. And I bring him in. So you have to decide, do I want a pointer or do I want a flusher? And I think that's dictated by your style of hunting. If you like to really run and gun, then you might be headed towards a flusher. If you like to plod and pick and really scour the cover slowly, I think a pointer. Okay, but that's me, and that's my particular breed.
And that's why I love doing these bonus episodes, because I think it's fascinating that somebody that's been in the gun dog world for as many years as you have.
Don't say how many.
me and you have differing opinions on that right there, right? Is I would say the exact opposite. If you want to run a gun, get a flushing, because that goes at the pace of you. You can go, 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 go. But also the pointing dog, it's just like, to me, I don't care if you range out 100 yards, because your task is to point the dog. You know, I'm not shooting a bird that you bump anyway. But that's why I love doing these profiles, to highlight the fact that everybody hunts different. Everybody's preference is different. It's neither right nor wrong. Like the only time it's a pass fail situation is in a testing situation, but we're talking about hunting, and that's your style of hunting, right? And who's to say that you're wrong in that?
No, I agree. Everybody's, you know, I hiked part of the Appalachian Trail, and there's a phrase that runs up and down the trail: hike your own hike.
Yes.
Meaning, you want to hike 20 miles, hike 20 miles. If you want to do 8, do 8. If you want to carry 50 pounds, you know, whatever it is. I think that type of philosophy easily transfers over into hunt your own hunt.
Yes.
Okay. If I want to hunt and I won't shoot a dog or shoot, yeah.
Hopefully you don't shoot a dog.
No. I only want to shoot a bird that, Terry Redland would have painted a situation and had a pointing dog there and a sunset in the back and so on and so forth. And those are the only birds I'll ever shoot. That's great. That's your hunt. Hunt your own hunt.
Yep.
If you want to just get out with your dog, be a team with your dog and put birds up, bring some birds home, that's your style of hunting. Exactly. You do whatever you want. So,
yep. I always say, and we can close it out on this, is, you know, the way I put it is, as long as it's safe, legal, and fun, have at it. It doesn't impact my life or how I train or hunt my dogs in the slightest. I just respect the same courtesy back my way, right?
Yep. Yeah. The fact of the matter is, too, the best part about it is the dogs don't know when we mess up.
Yeah.
Case in point, the last day I was in Iowa, it was winter came to Iowa that day. I think it was about November 12th or so. Mm-hmm. And Hans and I were in some cattails and actually met a guy from Tennessee, and him and his dog Arlo, we were out together.
Zach. I know Zach.
Yeah, exactly. And he has a Weimaraner too.
Yep.
And we were into some cattails, and his dog had some paw issues, and he was heading back to the car, and Hans and I were making this pass through these cattails, and we started putting birds up. Some of them were out of range. They heard us coming, but it was spitting snow, 30 or 40 miles an hour. We were living the dream. And I get to a point, and I stop for a minute there, because I don't like to keep moving if I don't know where he is, because then he starts looking for me, and we might miss some cover or something. So I stay put for a while, and I'm waiting and waiting, and like, I don't know where he is. So I started heading in the direction that I saw him last, and I get about 20 yards away from him, and I can see him through the cattails. He's wearing his orange vest, and there he is, locked up. And I'm like, well, no wonder you didn't come over to where I was, right?
Yeah.
So as I cover that last 20 yards, two hens get up between me and him, and he doesn't move, and he's still locked up. And I could see it in his eyes. He's like, no, there's one more here. And I'm thinking, oh boy, I hope this is a rooster, because it's our last day too.
Yeah.
And sure enough, up gets this rooster. I miss.
Ah.
Okay. But you know what? We still had another, I don't know, couple hundred yards to hunt. He hunted at this with the same intensity, the same desire, the same joy as he did when he flushed that bird, or I flushed that bird.
Yeah.
But, you know, did he know I missed? Probably not.
Yep.
He still had a good time. I was more upset than he was, you know.
Oh yeah. No, and that's going to live with you longer than him. And you know, to be perfectly honest, you know, I'm not the best with words, and not to romanticize it a little bit, but I think there's a lesson somewhere in there for all of us with just how we live our lives from day to day anyway.
Yeah.
So well, Chris, I appreciate you coming on, kind of sharing your story and what got you into the gun dog world, and you know, your preferences on how you hunt and your style and stuff like that. You know, we'll have to circle back around and keep in touch.
Sure. I am on Instagram if anybody wants to see pictures of Hans under the handle of Uncle Duffer's Doggy Boot Camp.
Uncle Duffer's Doggy Boot Camp. Got it. Right. Well, right. Again, Chris, I appreciate you making the time for us, and we'll talk soon.
You bet. Very good. Take care, Nick.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to GDIY. If you enjoy this podcast, please remember to take a moment to rate, review, and share with a friend. Also, be sure to follow us and our partners on Facebook and Instagram under Gundog It Yourself. If you really enjoy the podcast and would like to contribute even more to the future content, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/gundogityourself. Thanks again, and happy hunting. Everyone seems to have the same questions or concerns when they start trying to decide which kennel to purchase for their vehicle. Perhaps it's time to stop asking all the questions and just design the perfect setup that meets your exact needs. Bee Pro Kennel specializes in designing and fabricating custom premier dog boxes handcrafted right here in the USA from high-grade, lightweight aluminum. They'll get you set up with the size dimensions, lighting, storage, battery boxes with solar charging, and anything else you can dream of. Stop stressing over buying the wrong setup just after replace it again in a year. Go ahead and check out beeprokennels.com and get exactly what you want. If you're considering changing your dog's food soon, then be sure to check out Eukanuba Pro Performance. Their science-backed formulas are designed to take your dog to the next level of performance. They also now have the new puppy formula to help your pup start strong and live active. When looking at all the different food options, remember Eukanuba to help power their ultimate performance.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Bob from Lone Duck's Gun Dog Chronicles podcast. I hope you just enjoyed the episode you just listened to. And if you did, I think you'll enjoy hopping on ours. We've got professional retriever trainers and upland bird dog trainers from across the country and world sharing their tips and tricks and great stories to help you and your dog get ready for the season. We'll see you there.